The president of the Canadian Hockey League, commissioner of the OHL, David Branch, is with us in studio. It's nice to see you, as always. We've had this conversation. We had this conversation a year ago when this thing first came up. So I have a pretty good idea of your position on this. But there were some questions raised yesterday that we wanted to get your response to, so we're glad you're here for it. In a generic sense, to start our conversation, are you opposed to the creation of an association to represent junior hockey players?
I probably would respond by saying that we have a great partnership with our players and their families and their agents, with our teams in the league. And we don't feel that a third party can do it any better. When you look at the developments and the improvements that we've made over the past 10 years for sure, Bob, I mean, no one does it better. And I think we can continue on and represent the interests and well-being of the players who we regard as clearly the most important people in the game.
The critical issue for most people, and I think for me too, and I don't pretend to understand it, I haven't lived it, is that the financial stipend that is given to junior hockey players, most of whom live away from home, is extremely nominal. And that one wonders, based on whether it's $200 a month or whatever the number actually is, and I'm sure it varies, is that enough for a young person in the circumstances that he is in to live without additional support from his parents, significant support from his parents?
Well, I guess, you know, how one would define the amount of money a 16 to 19-year-old player needs might be for debate for sure, Bob. I mean, and to suggest significant financial support from the family, not even close. I mean, when you consider the environment that the player is in, where he's in a billet, all his meals are provided, travel, you know, all his equipment needs, of course, including sticks and skates, are provided free of charge. All his educational costs while he plays in our league, tuition, books, tutors are all looked after. And you may recall, Bob, going back, I want to say about 8 years ago when we announced the introduction of our drug education and anti-doping program, you asked me with Paul Melia of CCES, is there a problem? And we said, no, we don't believe there is a problem. Well, then why are you doing it? It's a lot of money. And we were at a point in our evolution where we felt we had to do more for our players, that we were concerned as to how much money you want to necessarily put in their pockets. And so the approach we've taken to life, going back for the past 10 years, like I say, is the drug education program, the concussion management program, where all our players receive baseline tests annually and full concussion protocols, a respect and sport program that they take annually that's headed by Sheldon Kennedy, on harassment and abuse. It goes on and on and on. The number of programs that we've put in place at cost for the benefit of the player. And I was saying before we came on air to Ken that, you know, we're the number one development league in the world for the NHL. But we're also the number one development league in the world for the CIS. We have 806 players who are on scholarship this past year. And players now want to come to our league. And there's options out there. There's lots of options, and we recognized the competition, and we had to get better. And I guess to the credit of our owners, investing in the game, investing in the player in many different ways, not buying players, we've enjoyed tremendous success, Bob, and I think it's been very healthy for us as we've evolved. I think, too, player safety. We're regarded as leaders there. In 2006, we introduced a no contact to the head rule. We were the first league. Regardless of whether it's minor hockey or any other, people said we were going to ruin the game, you know. And you know what? It hasn't. And now I think every league's pretty well got a no head checking rule. So, I mean, player safety's always been a big factor for us. We put in, you know, other benefits for players, off-season training allowances like we've never had before. I think, too, Bob, that one of the things we were criticized for is that, well, they're only getting $50 a week, okay? Mm-hmm. And on the surface, I could see where people would say that's, you know, certainly not correct, right, or whatever the case may be. And what we were actually, and what we actually were doing, we had a number of buckets that we were providing financial benefits to the players, and we didn't really give them much of a raise. I heard, you know, your comment last night.
But did it go from about $200 a month to $450 a month?
No, it went from $450 to $470. Because what we did is we consolidated all the money that we were giving a player and put it under one umbrella into one bucket. And so that is, in fact, what.
Well, when you say money, though, David, let me just clarify here. Are you talking about actual dollars and cents, or are you talking about value?
It's actual dollars and cents. Some of it is around, like, gas allowance monies and things of that nature. And for overage players, and we only have three of those on each team, they get $900 a month. So, but hey, you're not getting rich. We don't profess that that's the way to do it. I know that when we speak to parents in focus groups that we conduct from time to time, we get a lot of good information back. And you know what? I mean, they have no issue with the programs. We just came out of a focus group with overage players. Players that you would hope recognized, hey, I'm gone, I can say whatever I want, mm-hmm. you know. And while I introduced the guys and thanked them for coming, I said, hey, I'm out of here. I want you guys to be open and honest. In fact, we had a former player really mediate and facilitate it. And it was great, the takeaways that we got from that group. And on their top five of things they felt we could do better, the financial element was not one of them.
Really?
David, one of the things I asked Buzz yesterday was, you know, I pointed out that when you hear people talk about major, junior, and teams making money, they'll say things like, oh, the Quebec Ramparts must be rolling in cash. They average over 9,000 fans a game. London, they average over 9,000 fans a game. And this whole union thing seems to be coming out of Quebec. In the Quebec Major Junior League, I have the numbers here. It's 13 of the 18 teams in the league average under 3,000 fans per game. So is there really more money to go around, and can there be revenue sharing to give more players money? Or, as you kind of mentioned before, is there already revenue sharing going on?
Yeah, great question. And I mean, listen, I'm not negotiating here. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the fact that we are sensitive to the needs and well-being of our players. And all our players have, or 99% of our players have agents. And of course, the family's there to support them, and our teams work with them. We're dealing with kids, not paid professionals, and they're not paid professionals. But I mean, when you look at the makeup of the CHL, of our 52 Canadian-based teams, 15 are in markets of less than 50,000. So that goes to the point you've raised, where people form certain perceptions based on the optics of some of our top-branded teams. We do have revenue sharing. That's the only way our small markets stay in business, you know. So, I mean, we're not, you know, devoid to that, because we also recognize that we have to keep our ticket prices at an affordable rate. We take pride in being a family entertainment sport. And many of our communities, you know, struggle financially. I know that I heard you mention Acadie Bathurst. That's my hometown. Mm-hmm. And the Tatan, I mean, you talk about economic hardships. But that community rallies around their team. You know, you go out in Prince Albert. I mean, it's incredible what they do to keep that team afloat. On and on and on. So it's great to see the community involvement. And we're, you know, we talk proud. We are proud. Mm-hmm. And we're not crying poor. But are there teams that make money? Yes. But are there teams that lose money? Of course.
The scholarship program, you mentioned you had over 800 people playing CIS. I wanted to know what does a kid who, say, comes and plays 40 games for Belleville as an 18-year-old, and then he goes off and he gets cut, then he goes and plays a couple years of junior A, what does he end up? Does he end up with any sort of educational package out of his half year with the Bulls or anything like that?
Well, I mean, first of all, the minimum benefit for a scholarship for a player is tuition, books, and compulsory fees for each year played. And, I mean, on the situation you've described, he would get half a year based on playing 40 games. Now, understand, there's enhancements to the scholarship program where you can say one game played, full year guaranteed, okay? The top-end guys, one game played, 4 years guaranteed. The scholarship program, like I say, has many enhancements, some of which, you know, on the top end is books, tuition, room and board. In other words, a full ride. So our teams can also, you know, put that out there to a player that they're hoping will join their program. Because as I said off the top, it's a very competitive marketplace.
So this is a negotiated agreement. The teams have the ability to determine what kind of educational commitment they're prepared to make to an individual player.
That in effect, yes, that's right, Bob, with the minimum being.
There is a minimum, but it could be higher.
And the ceiling
You can
is.
Give them more.
Yes.
And are there limitations on what universities, colleges they can attend?
You know what? I'm going to suggest our scholarship program is the best in North America. I mean, you can take the scholarship you've earned. You can go to university. You can go to college. You can go to firefighter school. You can go to EMS, aviation school, police academy. School. We haven't crossed that bridge yet, you know. But, I mean, it's very flexible. What we do, Bob, and I know there's some misinformation sometimes out there, or misunderstanding, is that you're sitting down to negotiate with your agent and your family, with our team, your education package. And we peg your tuition, okay, as being the tariff of the university that's closest to your home. So say you lived in Toronto, well, then you'd use U of T. And if you decided that you wanted to go to Lakehead and Thunder Bay, you would get the U of T tariff as a minimum to what you had otherwise negotiated.
So it's not a hard dollar number.
Well, it works two ways. I mean, you can leave it open-ended, okay, or cap it. Most of our teams try and cap it so they can, you know, manage.
So there's a maximum.
Cap it. Well, the maximum is books, tuition, room, and board. And
but is that tuition a specific dollar and cent amount, or it is whatever the tuition is? Because you know, as we all do, that the cost of going to one school in one program can be dramatically different than going to another school in a different program.
Yeah, I don't know if the word dramatic, from what I've seen, is necessarily the case. You know, we're not talking about going to, say, medical school here. We're talking about an undergraduate degree, okay, first of all. And the variances aren't that great, Bob. No. You know, so I mean, it's just a way of trying to put a dollar figure there. And there's an escalator built into it as well, okay, so that there's the cost of living that goes with it, so that 4 years from now, as an example, you know, you can see your scholarship would be up appropriately, the funds you're otherwise due.
You talked about your league being more competitive with other leagues around the world. I wanted to ask you about the USHL down south. How has that changed how the CHL operates? And I know they're not a tier one league per se, but they're supplying a lot of players to NCAA. But we see some really good players come from NCAA come to here. Are your teams competing against USHL kids to recruit them up here now? How does that work out?
I think it's a good way to position it. Yeah, the USHL's had significant growth. They're, you know, I they're a good league. They say they're tier one.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say they're not. I don't think they're as good as us. But I mean, hey, the proof is in the pudding, as they say. But that's an example of the fact that there's options out there. There's alternatives out there. And I think the package that we put together for families really brings a level of comfort. In the Ontario alone, we had 88 Americans playing in our league. And the people value, you know, everything we do with billets, security, the drug testing, the head injuries and concussion management, style of play, emphasis on, you know, dealing with issues that none of us like to see in our game.
What would you like the NCAA to get rid of that whole 48-hour rule in a major junior camp? What's major junior's take on that?
Well, we'd like to see the NCAA do away with the rule altogether. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's terrible that a 16-year-old player and his family have to make such an important life decision, quite frankly. But that's not for us to say. The NCAA is very interesting the way they operate. The 48-hour rule is really, you know, not what it's cranked
it's
up to be.
Kind of murky.
Yeah. I mean, it's 48 hours and receive expenses for a period of greater than 48 hours. The key is don't play in an exhibition game. Mm-hmm. And our teams will, and we have a rule. If you're going to play a kid in an exhibition game, you've got to give him an education contract because you cannot take away his college eligibility in the U.S. if that should be the case.
So you are informing these kids of, hey, if you step on the ice for us, this is going to be a big decision for you? And most of them, I assume, come in knowing that anyway.
Yeah, what we do, standard protocol, is right off the top, our teams have an open forum with parents and players. Plus, as I said, Ken, these kids have got agents. They're well-schooled. They know, you know, and so there's no hidden secrets here.
It's so much different from 20 years ago. My brother played major midget down east, and we're at a rink a couple years ago playing men's league, and we come out and there's a junior A game, and he said, why would guys play junior A? I said, well, they're looking to make the jump to major junior or NCAA. Because you can go to NCAA from junior A? I go, tier two. He didn't even know. He played with a bunch of guys who played in the O, played in the Q. It's just a lot. It's so much different for kids now, what they do know. And like you said, agents at 14, 15 years old.
Correct, yeah.
What do you think the future is of this potential association?
You know, Bob, I have no idea. You know, I've not really looked at it. I mean, I think that the key for us is to continue to analyze what we're doing, listen to our players, listen to our families, make adjustments, you know, and the like. I'm concerned that a lot of players maybe make decisions incorrectly when they leave our league, that instead of going and trying minor professional leagues, they should give CIS a shot first, you know. And I, once again, I was saying to Ken off air, one wild thought I had actually sitting by the lake on the weekend was, wouldn't it be nice if we could get the cooperation where minor professional leagues would say, we can't take a player out of the CHL unless they played 1 year of at least of CIS hockey, and to give them the taste of that. Now, not everybody is going to be a student.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I recognize that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying NHL or AHL. No, I know, but I mean just more emphasis on it, Bob, because I really believe that. That's so important. Why not get your degree? Then try and follow your dreams. And there's nothing wrong with following your dreams.
And you can get better as a hockey player playing CIS, too. It's not like you're just saying, oh, well, that's it.
Oh, no, we acknowledge. Yeah. I mean, the academic experience or the life experience of going to a university or to a college is extremely important. But the quality of hockey is pretty good.
It's dang good.
It's a hidden secret. You
it's
know?
A gem.
We're working hard with the CIS to help market, promote, and work together. And they have some rules, too, that we're trying to get our heads around, where if you play a full year of professional hockey, you lose 1 year of ability to play university hockey. You can go to school, but you can't play with the school team. So we've had some great dialogue with them, and we're trying to line up as best as possible because, hey, they value the $6.2 million we give them last year, but not that alone. I mean, they recognize that they've got a great, you know, product based on our players. And so that's good, that's healthy, and we'll see what we can affect there by way of change together.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but when this subject first came up and this group, a couple of guys, floated this idea of a union, /association for junior hockey players, did you or did you not try and have dialogue with them?
No. Had no dialogue.
I thought you tried and
well,
they didn't respond.
I mean, Bob, we actually hired a private investigator to try and find out who they were.
Oh, okay.
Because our players were getting calls late at night, block calls, a lot of different funny happenings and, you know, people using names and it wasn't really them. And it was pretty bizarre.
If this association goes forward, if it becomes a reality, what do you suspect is going to be the key issue?
No idea. I wouldn't even want to speculate, Bob. Like I say, you know what? I value the fact that we do a great job with the people that count, and that's our players and our families. And we've come a long way. Make no mistake about it. Did we fall down? Absolutely. I can recall being vilified for not responding to scholarship payments. And you know what? They were right. And what did we do? We centralized everything now through the league office. So it's administered to properly and promptly. And so that's been one of the significant developments in our league too, as well. So I really feel comfortable that we've done a great job moving forward and we have a lot of exciting things. I know with the overage players, we just met with a group of them to get their views. And it was interesting, and I understand why. The number one thing that they said we could do better is provide support to the players from a mental health standpoint, and they were pointing to the tragedy involving Terry Trafford.
Right.
And absolutely. And we've engaged in discussions with the Canadian Mental Health Association. We are going to have a program with them next year. The Peterborough Petes ran a pilot project at the end of last year, And it's all about educating a player and staff on the signs and signals of mental health. The thing that I found out is that Canada is the third highest country in the industrialized world with suicides in young people.
Wow.
It's frightening. And the statistics are incredible. So, hey, we've got some work to do there. And Bob Nicholson, prior to his bailing out on us, hey, Bob?
Yeah.
He and I chatted, and he's an advocate, and I'm sure Tom Rennie and company will pick up where mental health training and support will become part of youth hockey programming as well.
What are the challenges of bringing something like that into a game that's always been perceived as so macho? Hey, you're cut. Go play for somebody else. Tough luck. Somebody else is going to put that sweater on.
That's an interesting one, Ken. Yeah. I know. You know, my speech is, and I spoke to the Saginaw Spirit when they returned to play. Mm-hmm. And I said, guys, tonight in Sault Ste. Marie, what you felt was love. Love is the most powerful word in the world. And as a group of guys, let's not be afraid to say it. And you know what? I mean, I believe in that principle. And you're right. We got to break down some of those traditional attitudes. Mm-hmm. And it's coming. It's coming. You know, it's a much more informed family unit, much more supportive family unit. And young people today, like I coach minor hockey, and I have for a number of years. And one of the things I get out of it is just seeing young people today and how they've, you know, look at things differently. And you know what? They say kids are different. Yeah, they are different, you know, mm-hmm. and we have to respond differently. And wow, you learn a lot. So mm-hmm. That's been a great experience, great exercise for me.
We'll watch this process with great interest and carefully if it goes anywhere, and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you, Bob.
Nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Always nice.